Good morning. This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large for Sunday, April 1st, 2012. Happy April Fool's Day. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Mithi Agnihotri Madhokar. Ahead, comedian Mo Alexander prepares to perform tonight in Fayetteville, and the University of Arkansas gets its own community garden. Also, Roger's first ever downtown restaurant week kicks off today, and looking for food in your backyard or someone else's.
Let me remind you that KUAF is a great value for your money. This is the Spring On Air fundraiser for KUAF. I'd like you to think just for a few minutes now about what you hear every time you tune in to this radio station. It could be Morning Edition during the morning, Monday through Friday. It could be All Things Considered every afternoon of the year. Car Talk, Prairie Home Companion, Ozarks at Large, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, Performance Today, the list continues. The cost of all those programs to you, minimal, and here's a key word, optional. But where else can you get your own price for entertainment that's available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year?
The answer to that question is easy. Nowhere. Support KUAF because you want to. Because public radio is valuable to your life. Because you know your family can listen to KUAF. Because we enrich your life. And choose your own price tag. Pledge an amount you can afford. Pledge an amount that reflects your enjoyment of KUAF. But do pledge right now, please. Call 575-KUAF or 1-800-522-KUAF. We need you, and we hope you need us.
We certainly do. You can consider how much to give to KUAF once you've made the decision to make a pledge to KUAF. The next choice, and we leave this one up to you as well, is how much to give. Many people feel that KUAF is worth a couple of bucks a week.
Right.
That's $104 a year, which is close, give or take a few pennies, I think, to our average pledge. If it's worth it to you to spend a couple of bucks every week to know that you've got NPR and Garrison Keillor and Ozarks at Large and great music coming to your house, your car, your headphones 24 hours a day, then please consider giving right now. You can do so with a bank draft, with a credit card, or with a simple writing of a check. That's up to you. But the important thing is, while you have a moment right now, that you call
1-800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF.
Just as we hope that Ozarks at Large is food for your intellect, we hope that you'll enjoy some of the stories we have on today's weekend edition of Ozarks at Large about food. Patrice Gross produces organic vegetables year-round on Foundation Farm located in northern Carroll County. He doesn't own a tractor. He doesn't own a tiller or a plow. Instead, he practices a system called no-till farming. It was established in the mid-20th century, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Thank you. Good hot tea on a wet, drizzly... Are you getting enough rain for your farm beds?
Yes, thank you. You know, 3-4 inches yesterday and more today. That's about the threshold where I start to get a little bit upset about water. Usually, you know, you try not to be because water is so great. Otherwise,
you don't have plows here?
No plows, no tiller, no machine. There's one machine we still have, which I can't get rid of, and that's the mower. I do it a lot like nature does it. I use layers of organic matter that feeds, not only protects my soil the way nature protects soil, but it also feeds my organic microorganism in the soil. And for that, I use mostly wheat. In the form of straw, so I use wheat straw.
Every farmer has to use pesticides and herbicides and soil amendments, nutrients, fertilizers, compost. So talk about what no-till farms don't require and do require in that respect.
Yes, we do require the main ingredient, as I mentioned, is the use of organic matter. And that comes mostly in the form of the mulch itself, the straw that I use on the beds. But also I use rabbit manure, you know, once a year. That's part of the formula. But beside those two things, which are very, very small in terms of the total input, I don't require anything else. And the reason is that the microorganism in a no-till soil mine all the nutrients for me. They go to work, you know, for me. And as long as a soil has all these resources, the microorganism will do the job, will do the work for me. So it's an amazing, now bear that, bear, think about this, because I don't need so many requirements, so many inputs, that makes my farming incredibly profitable. My profit margins are double that of a regular farm.
You've not tilled for 7 years, so what's the soil like? Where typically in the Ozarks here, wherever you put a shovel, you encounter clay and rock.
Well, in my soil, if you ever experience quicksand, if you take a shovel, it actually swallows your arm. In some situation when it really is perfect, but it only gets better year after year because there's such an amazing amount of micro life at work. So many worms. Right now we're planting cabbage that every time we put that trowel to put that tiny plant, we actually stand to kill 3 or 4 worms. It's insane. I mean, it's actually, you know, to the point where we have an issue with what can we do, and we set aside the worms. I mean, it's crazy.
But the wonderful thing about the worms that do survive the carnage is that they have vermiculture. So describe the castings from worms as an incredibly rich nutrient for the soil.
Yes, it is part of the system. So we have worms doing their work and everything else in between bacteria and, you know, we have the whole world of nature at work, including, you know, we also have mice and all kinds of other creatures that are part of the system. You know, I have frogs that are constantly around the beds at night in summer. That are part of the system too, and they just all of that tame the possibility of insect breakouts. It's amazing the amount of balance. You know what people don't realize: once you put together this natural system, you actually get really close to what nature was intended to do, and there is an amazing balance that gets created that allows me to not have any or many insect or disease issues.
So what crops do you grow here, and what are your yields like?
Well, I'm a typical truck farmer. I try to grow everything that people will buy from a table at a farmer's market. I have my preferences. I know my sort of favorite kids in the class, you know, peppers, and I love growing tomatoes, lettuce, basil. So it's kind of across the board. I don't know if I can make any sense of all that, but the yields are usually, well, I measure my yields in terms of dollar per square foot. And on half an acre of bed surface, I can grow about $50,000 worth of food. So that's basically, you know, like a real simple number to remember is my yields are equivalent to $100,000 an acre. Which, you know, I'm not the only guy to do that. There's a few, but it takes that kind of intensive approach to farming. And what I'm glad to say is that no-till can match the very best tilled organic farms in the country. With this system, you actually do less. You work less. And my proof there is that I do all this work. I raise my family. This is my only job, but only work 3 mornings a week, which might upset some farmers. Some people actually, I've had people just tell me I was a liar. So I say, well, just come and hide in the bushes.
We've had record heat all last summer. 3 months of 100-degree heat practically. Tremendous rains both last spring and now this spring. A no-till garden is, how does a no-till farm behave in these conditions?
It can absorb as much at twice as much water as a tilled soil. The organic matter content is part of that. The more organic matter content in the soil and the more absorption and retention of water it can hold. It's amazing to face. It has an amazing ability to face heat and dry weather in summer.
One study published several years ago in the journal Soil Science Society of America found that no-till soil tends to store more carbon, which aids in carbon sequestration and is more stable. Despite flooding rains, Foundation Farms fields were not saturated. We walk along narrow carpets of green fescue planted in between row crops.
As you can see, there is a succession, a perfect succession of bed and path. And the path are beautiful, green. They're easy to actually access the beds with, and there's never any mud in my system, and my vegetable is clean.
Patrice pushes a trowel effortlessly into a bed of kale, bringing up a black chunk of soil teeming with earthworms.
An amazing amount of decaying roots. You can see it looks exactly, of course, earthworms is here, but it looks like a crumbly chocolate cake. And that is impossible to have if you till your soil. When you till your soil, what you get is a powdery effect, not crumbly, because what I'm holding is billions and billions of organisms, bacteria and fungi and who knows what else.
And who knows what else?
Well, I sort of know, but it's out there. The science is really good on this, okay? By the way, it's starting to become really good. A lot of people are studying this.
Now I'm
getting into my mode of, I'm getting the...
Weeding.
Yeah.
Couldn't help it. Now you're starting to weed. Oh, you're getting back to work.
Okay.
Well, Patrice, thank you so much for talking with us.
It was fun. Thank you, Jackie. It's always a pleasure to have you on the farm.
This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. A hike through the Ozarks or Ouachitas takes you past more than just waterfalls, trees, and bluffs. You could be passing by a veritable salad bar if you know what you are doing. You can even find edible vegetation in the middle of a city park, as Ozarks at Large's Meredith Martin Moats recently discovered.
This past Saturday, Elevate Arkansas, an urban community wellness center, hosted its first walk in its spring-long wild plant and edible foraging series. Touted as a way to find free, organic, and vitamin-rich food growing in your own backyard, the walk took place at Little Rock's Allsop Park, where about 15 people showed up, including a few children. It was an unseasonably warm and sunny day, and the park was filled with children running, dogs sniffing, a group of masons holding a baseball tournament, and several mountain bikers on their way to the bike trails. Before heading into the more wooded areas, we met by the tennis courts near the creek, where many of the adults were armed with notebooks and iPhones in hand, ready to document information about each of the plants. Elevate director Jeff Dempsey began the walk by asking everyone to take a look at the books they had on hand, a necessary resource, he said, for both beginner and veteran foragers alike.
There's so many plants that are edible that I stick to the ones that I know, but, you know, I'll branch out when I find a new one or whatever, but I'll just, you know, always just double check with, you know, at least a couple of references and make sure I know exactly what it is. But with that, I think we're ready to start walking. Let's get into it. And if any of you guys want to just take one of these books with you, if you got an extra hand and whatnot, you're welcome to. But other than that, let's get walking.
With Jeff leading the way, we headed toward the stream, pillowy pockets of clover underfoot.
First thing I'll show you guys, it's the easiest thing everybody knows, is clover. Okay, and it's edible. You can pick the leaves and put them into a salad. You can pick the flowers and put them in a salad. Or you can, sometimes what we'll do if we find a lot of the flowers is actually like fritter them and fry them up. And you can do that with dandelions too. If there's just a bajillion dandelions, pick them all and batter them and throw them into a little oil and saute them, and they're really good that way. So clover, it grows everywhere. Let's take a walk over here. You see a lot of this pretty much all over Arkansas. This is just a wild chive or wild onion. So you can chop that up and put it in your salad. It tastes just like chives, just like onions or onion leaves.
One of my favorites of the day was henbit. I can almost promise you that it's growing somewhere near your house, probably right next to the clover. A member of the mint family, it has square-like leaves and is currently in its flowering stage, dotted with tiny lavender blooms.
We're going to find a bit more of this as we go. This grows everywhere in Arkansas, and that is henbit. It's a little bit hairy and, you know, kind of...
Say it again?
Henbit.
Henbit.
Mm-hmm. And it actually has, like, a square stem. It's related to mint. It doesn't taste minty at all. It tastes kind of like a mushroom or something.
We walked on, still in a rather populated area of the park. Dempsey noted that it's best not to forage in these traveled areas due to all the foot traffic. And even though many plants won't grow along heavily traveled paths, you can still find some of the hardiest versions next to parking lots and trails.
Okay, I've got one. This right here is plantain. And it's a very nutritious herb. I was telling some folks on the table that you can actually crush it up. You have like a mosquito bite or something like that, or a cut, you can crush it up and use it as like a poultice. It's got these prominent veins on it, and there are several different types of this. What I like to do with like this, because it grows all over my yard, and so does dandelion, is I'll pick this and get a good handful of it and blend up like bananas and peaches or blueberries and just any kind of fruits, and then throw that handful in there, and then you got like boom, and you got the power to move it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So this is Doug has just found some curly dock. Okay, and curly dock is like a not the greatest tasting plant, and it can grow really big. Like these leaves, I mean, they could be like this big after a while. And you want to make sure if you're going to eat them, especially if you're going to eat them raw, just pick the little leaves on there.
As we headed up to the more wooded areas, we picked peppergrass and tasted the edible flowers from a redfoot tree. Up into the rockier terrain of the mountain bike trail, we found one of my personal favorites, the tart and punchy wood sorrel.
And this variety has like a purple underside on the leaf. And it's also got that kind of purpley thing on the top that makes it look like a clover. And it looks a whole lot like a clover except for...
As we walk through some of the shadier and fern-filled areas, we sampled shoots of the greenbrier plant, which tasted much like fresh green beans, and sampled some wintercress, a plant similar to watercress, which also grows wild. Some of the plants were plentiful, others were just beginning to peek out behind the fallen dead leaves scattered along the ground. And while most of the walk was focused on adding some free, nutrition-loaded plants to meals and smoothies, there was some discussion of survival eating.
So everybody knows about pine trees. They're everywhere, but maybe you didn't know that you can actually eat the pine needles, but you can eat, like, if they have little bitty shoots on the end, that's what you want to eat, the tender. And then also if you're, like, in a survival situation, there's pine trees around, you can take the inner bark, you can scrape it off, and you can make it into a flower.
There will be several other plant walks taking place throughout the spring and summer. The next one will be on April 7th. For more information, visit Elevate Arkansas at elevatearkansas.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin-Moots.
And this is a fundraising edition of the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. It is our spring on-air fundraiser. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnew-Srimadholker.
This time of year, what with the beginning of Major League Baseball season within 24 hours, it would be incredibly easy to fill the next few minutes with baseball analogies. It's time for you to step up to the plate and call in your support. We're in the bottom of the ninth, and your pledge will be the grand slam that we need to score the winning run. Or you can knock one out of the park every time you call in a pledge. Is there a cricket analogy that would work here, Ithi?
A six?
Okay, no. let's just put the analogies aside and talk about the importance KUAF has in your life. You depend on us for in-depth news that goes beyond just the headlines, beyond the obvious stories. If KUAF brings value to your life, then now is the time for you to call in with your pledge of support in the amount you determine to 800-522-5823. If you don't call in the pledge, I'd hate to see this drive have to go into extra innings. Okay, one more analogy. The number to call, 800-522-5823. It takes no more than a couple of minutes to make the pledge. You can also do so quickly, easily, and securely online at KUAF.com.
NPR News on the Hour keeps you connected to what's happening in Washington, across the U.S., and around the world. And here at home, too. That news is paid for with listener contributions. And while you cannot hand Sylvia Pacioli a few dollars for field equipment, we can. That's how public radio works. You give to KUAF, we pay NPR for the news you use. Your donation keeps you connected. You can call at 1-800-522-KUAF.
That's 800-522-5823. And you're right, Ithi. I mean, a listener who might be listening to All Things Considered won't actually write the check that pays for the equipment that allows a reporter to report from the Sudan or from Afghanistan or from anywhere across the country. But that's, in essence, what you're helping us do, because when we pay the fees for the programs like Morning Edition or All Things Considered, we're helping those programs pay the reporters. It costs you very little to get the news from around the world, unlike any other source. If you appreciate the coverage you get from NPR, please consider giving what you can afford now.
1-800-522-KUAF, or you can go online on KUAF.com and click on Contribute Now. That's on the top left corner of the page.
So if you'd rather use your keyboard rather than your phone, we understand. But if you have a moment right now and you do have a phone available, 1-800-522-5823, and thank you.
Thank you. This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar. Earlier this week, I visited the site of University of Arkansas's Campus Community Garden. I met with U of A Honors College student Emily Crossfield, who's leading the effort, and others who are helping design and plant the garden. Here's the story.
That on both sides to plant those other plants in. You could just
kind of
like form a
We're planting an iris as the center point, and then around it we're planting six lilies of different red shades to, and we have white and red to, you know, go Razorbacks. And then around it we're going to plant different gladiola, caladium, and, you know, lily bulbs.
Jordan Miller is a University of Arkansas undergraduate student. She and about 20 other students are working on planting the University of Arkansas's very own campus community garden. The garden is the result of a campus-wide effort led by University of Arkansas Honors College student Emily Crossfield.
Well, I studied abroad this past summer in Berlin, and I saw a bunch of urban gardening there and about how it brought different people together, and there's probably not one person out here that I would have met if I hadn't started this, and some of them are really good friends now, so that was my main motivation. I don't know that much about plants, I'm learning, but I do know about people, so that's why I really wanted to do this.
Crossfield is a junior at the university. She's an honors biochemistry major, and her minor is in sustainability. She's also the director of sustainability for the Associated Student Government. The community garden will serve as a capstone project required for a sustainability minor. She's being mentored by Dr. Kurt Rom, a professor of horticulture and honors program director for Bumpus College. Crossfield says she started working on the community garden after Samantha Jones, a recent honors graduate of Bumpus College, surveyed about 86 universities with community gardens to research best practices for her honors thesis. Crossfield says Jones's research helped lay the groundwork for the garden.
She got a good basis of what makes a garden successful and what doesn't. So she was really helpful, especially in the beginning, figuring out the location, the importance of it being, you know, somewhere central. And she's been a very big help.
The campus community garden is 500 square feet in size and located between the Maple Hill West and Maple Hill East student residence halls on the University of Arkansas campus. While the location is favorable in a high visibility area, it does come with some challenges. For example, Certain areas of the garden receive less sunlight and have poor soil conditions. However, Crossfield says taking a few steps in the right direction can resolve these problems.
We just made up with that with our plant selection, honestly. Picking stuff like herbs and cucumbers, staying away from things like tomatoes that are really pest, they bring in a lot of pests. Bringing in flowers helps being a natural repellent too. So just bringing in a bunch of those different aspects. You just have to be careful with what you buy when you know you're going to have limited sun, is what I've learned. I didn't know that coming in.
Along with planting some shade-loving herbs, the group also plans to plant some broccoli, peppers, cucumbers, squash, and some flowers. Financial support for the garden was provided by the Associated Student Government, Residence Inter Hall Congress, Department of Facilities Management, and two registered student organizations called Grow Green and the Horticulture Club. Soil for the garden was provided by Facilities Management, and the compost came from the recycled food from the university cafeterias. Emily Crossfield walks over to a heap of compost.
And it's really funny because you can tell that this is compost from the cafeterias. Where is it? There's like pieces of corn on the cob that we found, and the butter packets. We probably found 50 butter packets. So you can tell it's real compost from the cafeterias.
More than 50 students from different university departments have come together to help design and plant the garden over the last few months. Tim Larrabee is one of them. He's using a shovel to get rocks out of the ground to level it properly.
We're going to put a bed here, and the ground is really hard with a bunch of clay and rock, and so we're going to have to make a raised bed, but we have to tear it all up first and relay this so we can build the wall, like that one over there.
The benefits of the project will be reaped by everyone involved. Crossfield says one half of the produce will go to anyone who continues to help with the garden.
The people that work, if you work and you come out and you show dedication and care for the garden, then you get to take some home. And also the other half is going to the Full Circle food pantry. And so people who go there can have, you know, they can have herbs to spice up their soup, or they might have some peppers or something like that. Just something different, fresh food. I think it makes a difference, flowers, if we have enough. So.
Not only does Crossfield want students to come together to work on the community garden, she also wants the experience to be educational.
During the summer, we're bringing in Upward Bound, and then we're trying to get Leverett Elementary involved for kids to know that their food doesn't come from McDonald's, it can come from the ground. And so for if you don't have the ability to make a garden yourself, you can learn from here still.
Emily Crossfield says the process of bringing the concept of a campus community garden to life has been a learning experience.
You have to be patient. Things to get done take a lot of time. But I've also learned to appreciate the people that support you. And I just want to give them a big hug all the time because they've been extremely helpful. But being patient and not always getting your way is okay sometimes. Sometimes it works for the better. So, you know, it's been good.
The University of Arkansas will dedicate the campus community garden this coming Monday afternoon at 3:30 p.m. The dedication ceremony will feature a number of speakers, including Dr. Kurt Rom, Professor of Horticulture and Bumpus College Honors Program Director, Steve Boss, Professor of Geosciences and Coordinator of Sustainability Minor Program, and University of Arkansas Chancellor Dr. G. David Gerhardt.
This is Ozarks at Large. There has been a bit of a restaurant boom in downtown Rogers, and if you haven't been there in a couple of years, you might be surprised.
The room we're going to be entering next never existed when we opened. It only came into being in November.
Tammy Varney is co-owner and head pastry chef at Meridian Dessert Salon and Cafe.
Because we could manage our production in our kitchen, but once we became wholesalers to Crystal Bridges, we obviously could not manage those kinds of numbers in our existence.
The French-inspired bistro has been open for about 11 months, and features a display case of croissants, tarts, and other pastries.
Everything we do here is from scratch. Everything that we do is, there's nothing canned. It took us about 6 months to realize we needed to buy a can opener. We're really proud of that. We're really, you know, that is what we set out to do. So that is as expected, and I'm really proud of that, that we've been able to do that.
Tammy Varney's vision for Meridian includes a sleek, open floor plan that she hopes invites patrons to linger longer at their tables during breakfast and lunch. Her concepts and enthusiasm are indicative of a new wave of entrepreneurship that's giving Rogers downtown a sense of revival. Dana Mather with Main Street Rogers is hoping the first ever Rogers Restaurant Week that begins Sunday will draw some attention to the downtown. Not everybody in Northwest Arkansas associates downtown Rogers with dining.
That's exactly what I'd heard from my friends and people I knew around town, even on the west side of Rogers and Bentonville area. We have all these wonderful things downtown, but they didn't know it, or they knew that it was here, but they just never made that 4 mile trip from 540 to downtown Rogers on Walnut Street. It's a straight shot. And they just didn't do it. I even heard people say, oh yeah, the rail's been there for a year and I've been meaning to try it, but I just haven't been there, as we're sitting in a restaurant out at Scottsdale Center, you know.
Dana Mather thinks getting people to let go of preconceived or dated images of downtown Rogers will be easy once they're there. Restaurant Week is designed to spotlight the diversity of the eateries. Heirloom Food and Gifts is an example of that diversity. Jen Keipel, the manager of Heirloom, points to a map on the wall in her small cafe. The hand-drawn map depicts a region extending roughly from Kansas City to Tulsa to Mena to Northwest Arkansas. This is the area where any gift item must come from to be included as part of Heirloom's retail offerings.
And everything has to be made by hand or from scratch or something. So, like, we have the candles and the soaps. We have jewelry and perfumes and things. And we're also carrying the heirloom seeds from Baker Creek. Those have been a huge seller. People love those.
She applies that same locally developed criteria for the food she serves. Embracing the slow food concept, that the more you know about the where and how of your food, the better you feel about eating your food.
You know, I think as a chef, it's important to me to understand the building blocks of food. Not just who's growing your food and where it comes from, but also from a preparation standpoint. I have a real issue sort of with the overproduction on the processing of food. And, you know, the further away from the natural ways that foods are created, the bigger the problem is. So, you know, here we are dedicated to making everything from scratch the way it would have been 100 years ago. So we don't have any processed ingredients in our kitchen or in our store. We make our own mayonnaise, we make our own pickles, crackers, breads, dressings, absolutely everything is made from scratch here.
There's whimsy at Heirloom, too. This week, a special Elvis-inspired sandwich was available, peanut butter, bacon, and banana on a multi-grain bun with a bit of honey drizzled on top. She's taken suggestions from customers and added some of those ideas to her menu. She says she wants the Heirloom experience to facilitate a greater conversation about food, and she thinks her downtown location is perfect for such an endeavor.
I think Rogers suits us and our purpose for what we're doing. There's a real dedication to sort of preserving things as they are, but yet there's a real appetite here to push the envelope and to kind of forward think. I mean, it's not so much, you know, tied to an identity, I think, as other parts of the region are. And there I think you've got a bit of a blessing, because I think you're able to just start with a blank canvas and surprise people. I think people have an idea of Rogers from maybe 15 years ago that when they come here, they're going to be very surprised.
Many of the nearly two dozen downtown restaurants participating in Rogers Restaurant Week are offering specials or price breaks or new items to further entice new customers inside. At Meridian Dessert Salon, Tammy Varney says the week is a chance for the chef to play.
We'll be serving a vegetable terrine as a starter. It will be like a little bit of a deconstructed ratatouille, and then we'll go on for a main course of an open-faced, what they call tartine. It's an open-faced sandwich with a poached salmon and poached shrimp, I think Chef said, and that'll have a beurre blanc, and then we'll move on to a fresh fruit pavlova. So it's really a chance for us. We may not be able to sustain that every single week of the year, but it's a chance for us to really pull out the stops and show people what we're capable of.
Fresh fruit pavlova? A honey-drizzled Elvis-based sandwich? Could it be that Rogers, that town south of the town with Crystal Bridges, and that town north of the town with the University of Arkansas, is becoming hip?
I think that it's hip. I'm a hip individual, and I'll tell you all about hip. And I think that the downtown Rogers is a hip place to be. And I think that it's just going to keep getting hipper and hipper as it goes along.
Julianne Yale has been working at the Rail on South 1st Street in Rogers since it started serving pizza and a wide selection of beer a little over a year ago. It opened right in the middle of that historic snowfall last winter. She's a native of the area, growing up in nearby Cave Springs, and says the recent transformation of downtown Rogers has been welcome and needed.
For the past 10 years or so, downtown Rogers really hasn't got a lot of attention. We've kind of the more empty storefronts than not. I think that now, I won't blame it on the Rail. However, I will say that we had something to do with the fact that we're seeing more faces downtown and we're seeing more storefronts open. We're seeing more people come down to shop and to get their necessities down here. I think it's good for the community all around because no one wants to see the heart of their town die. No one wants to see the heart of their town go to waste. So I think that encouraging people to come down and have a good place to not only drink but to eat and to socialize. And we've got the coffee shop next door. You can't really beat it.
Dana Mather, Events and Promotions Director for Main Street Rogers, says having businesses open up in downtown is part of the equation. Getting customers to find out about them and frequent them is the other half. She says that means convincing people from outside of Rogers that the downtown can be a destination, but it also means keeping locals from thinking they have to stray.
But I think that's changing now, too. And I even heard some people just a few minutes ago saying that they don't have to go down to Fayetteville now. They have more things here in Benton County, and we don't have to make that trip to Tulsa or Springfield or even Fayetteville now.
The first ever Rogers Restaurant Week begins Sunday and lasts through April 7th. You can learn more at MainStreetRogers.com.
This is a fundraising edition of the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Madholkar.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
While other news organizations like TV Network News are cutting their international news budgets, NPR News is expanding theirs. That means when you listen to All Things Considered or NPR News overall, you'll hear reporting from across the world, from foreign bureaus bringing you in-depth stories in context of a larger picture, so you get a deeper level of coverage. The depth and scope of All Things Considered can transform the way you understand current events and view the world, from rescuing dogs in China to finding similarities between your brain and Manhattan, to, you know, from the latest Hollywood release to unknown musicians in African villages and basically anywhere.
This kind of reporting keeps you connected with the rest of the world. And it does come with a price. KUAF will pay much money for All Things Considered this year, more than $60,000, more than $65,000, actually. You can help us pay that tab. Help us. We're not asking you to pay the whole thing, but you can help us pay that tab right now by calling 800-522-5823. You can also call 575-5823 or go online to KUAF.com. It's pretty easy to make a contribution there as well. Your dollars, combined with dollars from other listeners, pay for the majority of our operating budget. Your financial support is an investment in future listening. You can make the investment right now. You determine the amount. Some people can afford and think a dollar a week is best for them. Some people pay $2 a week. There are some people who join the KUAF Society. That's a $1,000 donation. If that's something you can do, fantastic. But I'm saying make the contribution that best fits your the value you place on KUAF and your budget. 800-522-5823, 575-5823. You can also give online.
Yes, you can click on the Contribute Now button that's on the top left corner of the KUAF page.
All of the programs that you hear on KUAF, whether it's the news programs I just mentioned, All Things Considered, or Talk of the Nation, or Weekend Edition, or the programs that perhaps you listen to for more of an entertainment sort of experience.
Car Talk,
Prairie Home Companion, What Do You Know? All of those programs and all of the ones in between do cost money. And the way that we can continue to bring you these programs is with your financial support. 800-522-5823.
800-522-KUAF.
And very much everyone at Ozarks at Large and KUAF says
thanks.
Thank you. Tonight, Mo Alexander will display what he calls his observational and confrontational style of stand-up comedy. He'll be at the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street beginning at 7:30. Tonight's show is just one of hundreds that he'll do this year. His upcoming itinerary includes shows across the South, in Wisconsin, and in the Bahamas. Earlier this week, I asked him if all that travel allows him time to create more material for his stand-up performances.
You know, it does, because sometimes you'll be in the car bored and it's just a thought will hit you, or better yet, you'll just see something by the road and have to talk about that. You're like, you won't believe these. You know, you'll see just signs in weird places, or you'll see a weird, like, you know, this is America and everything is a little weird some places. Like in the back roads of Alabama, I found like an entire little village of stuff that some guy had made out of like spare parts. He had like a Wizard of Oz theme, and there was an alien spaceship, and I'm just like, I need to get out of here before they start thinking I'm dinner. It was very, I put up pictures of that thing. It's very weird. Yes, you get material from everywhere, though. Being in the car, on the road, at a truck stop in the middle of the morning at 3 o'clock a.m., because you get to read some kind of new, fun, and racist graffiti. It's great.
What is the line you're drawing between thinking, oh, this could be material, oh, this is kind of scary?
Oh, it's always scary. The scarier, the better. The scarier the act, the better material is for me. Because I'm not a nice and friendly comic. I'm not juggling. I'm very honest. I'm kind of dark. I'm very twisted. The darkest stuff on the planet makes me laugh, and then I make people laugh from that.
Do you really?
I truly, I'm not even joking. I always forget, but there's this one bathroom on the way to Birmingham, Alabama, at a pilot station, and I always want to take my iPhone in there just to take the pictures of whatever new racist graffiti is on the wall, and it just makes me laugh. And I'm like, I don't want to walk into a bathroom with a camera. That just looks frightening. But I'm just telling you, it's got some of the best racist graffiti I've ever seen in my life. It's hilarious.
When you're, you know, and you're in that bathroom, you see some of this horrible racist graffiti. I mean, how do you make that funny? I know you say you're an honest comic.
I don't have to make it funny. It makes itself funny. You'll see some of the most ignorant racist graffiti on the planet say, like, white supremacy with the word white misspelled. I'm just like, really? Really? You know, heal all the N-words. And I'm just like, really? You just spelled that with a Q. What is your problem? Why are you just idiotic? What's wrong with you? Go back to your trailer and inbreed with your third cousin once removed, divided by your daddy's square pie. Anyway.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are you ever worried about offending someone? Not that it would hurt your feelings or you feel bad about it, but what they might do.
No. What's the worst thing you can do? Get mad, cry to the man. He offended me with assault, and I don't like to think on Sunday's night because that's a church day. We ain't supposed to be thinking. No, get over yourself. Comedy is supposed to be comedy. If you're easily offended, don't come to the club. Comics are horrible human beings. We drink, most of us smoke, we curse, we do horrible things to waitresses. We're not the normal breed of everybody. We're not 9-to-5ers. We're not going to go, hey, did you see what happened last night on
Mad Men?
You know, Mad Men, did you care about Mad Men? Unless the entire set burned up and someone got ran naked with just a leopard print scarf on, no, I don't see it. I don't care about it. It's not. Don't ask me anything about a reality show because I don't care about anyone on those shows. I had a horrible joke last week. I can't even do on your air right now. It's what every now and then you get a joke you're going to use for 2 or 3, you know, performances only because it's so right in the moment, and I had a great line about Kim Kardashian and a flower bombing, but I can't do it on the radio. Trust me, I can't.
Okay, I trust you.
If you want to look it up on my Twitter account, Mo Alexander, M-O Alexander. It's on there from last Sunday night or Friday night or something. It's there.
You know, it's funny you bring up Twitter because Steve Martin has become a big person of tweets, and he says he finds out that there are a lot of funny people out there who aren't comics. Do you find that out?
Yes, there's a lot of funny people. There's a lot of people who can write funny, but you have to be able to translate writing funny into taking it on stage and making it funny. Because a lot of people can write some of the funniest things on the planet, but they can't stand up in front of people.
Is it ever tough to let go of maybe a topical joke? Maybe it's about Kim Kardashian getting flower bombed, and 3 weeks or 3 months out, you go, boy, it's still a funny thing, but it's not nearly as relevant, and I've got to let it go?
A joke like that is so in the moment, I can't keep it. I cannot keep it. Because I did it twice, it was relevant at that very moment in time because it just happened. And yeah, it's a funny joke, but I can't keep that. I mean, if it's something Like, there's a story I started talking about back in October, because it happened in October, about this family of four who got lost in a corn maze for 8 hours and had to get called out, had to call 911 to get out. That joke is still in my set. I'm keeping that. I'm keeping that for right now. Because it's funny. I don't care how non-relevant it is. It happened. It really happened. And it just shows the stupidity of human beings that you're in a corn maze. And you couldn't get out of a corn maze, and you're calling 911 to get you out of a corn maze. I'm not going to do the joke on the air, but trust me, it's not right. I mean, it's corn. Walk straight through it. It's not going to hurt you. There's no pitfalls. There's not a minotaur that they're trying to eat you. It's corn. Just walk till you see more or less corn. That's not even the joke I do about this. That's just me and how I truly felt about how the joke came about. Because I heard someone got lost in a corn maze and had to call 911, and I'm just like, it's corn. Keep walking through the corn. That's all you got to do. It's cool. You'll get out eventually. I just hate people. I just make fun of things like that. That joke will stay in my head for a long time because it's funny to me.
I guess if you're an observer, an appreciator of sorts of stupid human behavior, you're never going to run out of material. You're never going to be disappointed.
No. I consider myself more than an observer. I like to call my comedy observational plus confrontational. Because if you do something stupid, I'm going to call you on it. It's not just like I'm sitting back here, you know, watching someone cross the street wrong or something. And I was like, hey, you're an idiot. Do it this way. I'm going to confront you about your stupidity. Seriously. And I was like, hey, I'm going to make fun of you to your face, and I'm going to talk about you later on the stage. That's what's going to happen.
I'm now going to have this thing in my subconscious before I do anything. Would Mo Alexander find this stupid? Am I about to do something that could be part of his act?
That is a great way to live your life right there. What would Mo laugh at? There you go.
We could get bracelets. WMLA. What would Mo laugh at?
What would Mo laugh at? I like that. That's still the bracelets. I got to get on that. That's beautiful.
Well, Mo Alexander will be at the UARC Bowl. It's Sunday night. It's at 7:30. My advice is try not to do anything between now and then that would make Mo laugh.
Do not end up on the national news this week, and I will make fun of you. Can I plug some stuff real quick?
I was about to ask.
Oh, okay, cool. The website is slapthestupid.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My Twitter account is Mo Alexander, and Facebook is Comedian Mo Alexander. Go all there. Check me out. See some videos on YouTube, Mo Alexander. If you type in M.O. Alexander, you'll find a whole bunch about me.
You will.
And lots. Some of it's bad, some of it's good, some of it involves midgets. I don't care.
Mo, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you very much.
Mo Alexander will be on stage at the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street tonight in Fayetteville. Show begins at 7:30. His webpage is slapthestupid.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Mo Alexander. And you can hear more from our conversation, including how he deconstructs the comedy of masters like the Marx Brothers, Richard Pryor, and George Carlin, in an audio extra that's available at OzarksAtLarge.com.
It is Sunday, April 1st, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker.
And with us is Becca Bacon-Martin, Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
That is our low-budget April Fool's joke right there.
Well, I didn't get to be anybody else. I want to be Antoinette Grajeda.
You can do that. All right.
So this is not a prank. We're going to talk about a book called Wicked Plants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely in love with this author. Her name is Amy Stewart, and she's coming to Northwest Arkansas to speak to the Flower Garden and Nature Society. She did a book called Wicked Bugs that I think you're familiar with.
Talked to her about it maybe a year and a half ago.
Okay. And you asked her about chiggers?
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
Yes. Which are the wickedest of all bugs.
She's from out in California. Did she know what chiggers were?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Okay.
Very much so. They're part of the mite family.
Okay. Well, this book started from all the research she did for another book called Flower Confidential, where she was looking at florists and how flowers get to you and so forth. And she found out in all of these flower shops and gardens and nurseries, there was one little corner of plants that are wicked, that are poisonous, that are whatever. And she
in
got,
some cases, carnivorous, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so she got interested in this. A tree that sheds toxic daggers.
What?
A glistening red seed that stops your heart. A shrub that causes paralysis. A vine that strangles. And so she started enumerating these 200 plants that kill, maim, intoxicate, and otherwise offend. Mm. Along the way, she ended up doing all sorts of research, history books, professors, historians, obituaries, medical journals, finding out how these plants have killed people. Here's what she discovered. A whole lot of people have poisonous plants in their gardens and pay no attention to them.
Well, there's poisonous and then there's poisonous, right?
Yes.
I mean, poison ivy can be
irritant.
Yes,
but she's talking about plants that will really make you sick.
Okay.
So she has written this book in part for fun, and in part for people who have little kids running around. And she says, I have friends with small children who run around covering every electrical outlet, but I can't persuade them to yank out a deadly plant growing right next to the front door. She says 3,900 people are injured annually by electrical outlets, and 68,000 are poisoned by plants.
What?
68,000.
So... And she also says that it's probably a bad idea to go prowling around in the dark corners of neighbors' gardens because she now has a fenced-in section of poisonous plants in her garden.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Maybe it's time for a Wicked Plants interview, just to.
Could be.
I think she is an absolutely brilliant speaker.
When is she here?
She is here April 21st at 1:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library. It is free to members of the Flower Garden and Nature Society and $15 for non-members. And you can find out more by emailing lbr845@cox.net.
lbr845@cox.net. Okay.
And this afternoon, you can go see Sweeney Todd, which kind of seems like a great segue.
Mm-hmm.
2 o'clock at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. Tickets are $10. It's Crafts Sunday at Walmart's Spark Cafe in Bentonville. Take your little people to make Brazilian music makers from 2 to 4. There's a trunk show at Ozark Folkways from 2 to 4. It's called Boston Mountain Couture, and it features the work of Olive Loom Boutique, Betty Bobbitt Designs, and Jewelry by Laura Jane. And Circus Oz is at 2 and 7 at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $39.
All right. Oh, well, there you go. Yes, my turn.
He's Ithi Agnihotri-Matolker.
Right.
She's Kyle Kellums, and I don't know who I am, but...
You're Antoinette.
Oh, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Happy April Fool's Day.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, pursuing peace through education at arkansas.edu/Fulbright.
SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, will present its inaugural season finale featuring the SONA Chorale on Saturday, April 14th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Exploring the theme of love, SONA will perform Beethoven's epic Ninth Symphony. Tickets available at 443-5600 or waltonartcenter.org. We're not big pranksters, are we?
We
are.
You
could tell
yes.
that when we were with Becca. We're just not very good at April Fools. Here's one thing that's not fooling you.
Okay.
The programs you hear are because of you.
KUAF is hosting its spring fundraiser, and you can help by pledging your support now. You can call 1-800-522-KUAF or contribute online at KUAF.com.
You determine the amount and you determine the method. What we do want you to remember is that listener support, support from people just like you who are listening to KUAF right now and listening to Ozarks at Large, it's your financial support that when pooled together keeps us on the air. It's a system we've been using for a long time. It's worked, and we do appreciate it, but it's time now, if you haven't given recently, to do so.
And any contribution makes a difference.
It does indeed. 800-522-5823. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ithi Agnihotri-Matolker.
Thanks for listening. And, of course, thank you for your financial support to KUAF, and have a very good Sunday and April Fool's Day.